Good day. My name is Michelle, and welcome to Nova's Business Report on the Market Watch. With me today, I have Robert McGregor from Ceres. Thank you very much, Robert. And we're going to talk today about the reducing of the spread between prime and repo. It has been announced a week or so ago. So people have already heard the news. But maybe we can today explain a little bit about the impact on both the consumer and the bank then. So, Rob, let's start off by maybe just as background to our listeners is that a few years ago, I'm trying to rack my brain when that was, the banks were to reduce the spread from 475, so 475 basis points a few years ago, to reduce the spread with 100 basis points to 375. And that spread has been in place for quite a few years. And now this spread is now reduced to 3.5. Maybe just take us through the reasoning that the Bank of Namibia highlighted when this was announced.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So the central bank has announced that they are further reducing that spread. So from the current 375 to 350 basis points, implemented in sort of two half steps. So 12.5 basis points reduction by, I think it's end of September this year, and then the remaining 12.5 basis point reduction by end of December. So the central bank's reasoning is that it's out of line with what we're seeing elsewhere in the region, that in other countries in the region, they're seeing that that level is at 350 basis points. And also in addition to that, I think it's an effort to try and provide some relief to consumers who are indebted. So I think the scope for rate cuts in Namibia is quite limited. We are already still below South Africa in terms of the repo rate. The outlook for South Africa's rate cuts are not as strong as before. And I think what we've seen is the Bank of Namibia has maybe cut a bit aggressively in anticipation that the Reserve Bank would cut as aggressively. That hasn't occurred. And so the central bank is a bit nervous about maintaining this repo rate differential for too long, and this is an additional way to provide some level of relief to consumers that have debt.
Is that going to work, Rob? Is this going to work for them?
Well, I mean, look, banks are experts at pricing risk. It's what they're supposed to do. It's what they do day to day. They've got incredibly complex models that help them do this day in and day out. So if you have a loan at the moment, you're probably quite lucky as long as it's you're sort of tied to prime in some way, and you'll see that reduction come through a little bit. But I think the challenge is that going forward, new loans, it's very easy to take this into account. So your reference rate might be prime, but you know, banks might then start going, all right, well, we'll do prime plus 0.25 or prime plus 0.5 instead to account for that. So sort of trying to plan or direct what the sort of reference rate or risk rate should be is very, very difficult, because the banks are the ones that price the risk themselves and will determine what their risk appetite is depending on whether the economy is growing or not as well.
Yeah. Okay. So that's from the view of the consumer, and those are obviously those that borrow from banks. Does this mean that there's also relief for those that are borrowing outside the banking sphere?
It largely depends on the lending there or the borrowing. So, I mean, if you've got a loan that is tied to prime, and if the prime rate comes down, you're in luck. If not, then unfortunately, that's not the case. So if you've got a fixed rate loan, that's not going to adjust. So it very much depends on the nature of that loan. So for instance, people who rely on micro lenders, it very much depends on the wording of that contract. But again, micro lenders aren't regulated by the central bank. Those fall under the jurisdiction of NAMFISA. And so a lot of those clients might not be as lucky.
Yeah, and I must say, from what I've heard, there's not so much risk modeling going on. Everybody is sort of charged at the maximum rate. So, okay, so from the point of view of banks then, as you said, they are in the business of pricing for risk. They have gone through some pressure from the regulator. Maybe you can just highlight for us other adjustments that they have had to make, which will now be in addition to this spread reduction.
Yes, I mean, we've also seen these directives coming through on pricing and fees charged by banks. So sort of the central bank, as well as the Ministry of Finance, coming in and saying, we think you charge too much for XYZ products. We're setting sort of price limits here. This needs to be free, and so on. And again, you know, that might provide some relief for consumers, but I think, you know, that this isn't the correct approach to it. So there's two dangers to this. One, to my mind, is that if you start setting price ceilings, again, that becomes a ceiling. So, you know, an entity might say, all right, well, you know, we've charged more on this one where we're forced to charge lower, but on this other one where we can now charge higher, we're going to increase the prices because we need to make up for it somewhere. And by creating all of these regulations, by regulating the sector more and more, you're creating barriers to entry. You're reducing the potential for competition in what is already a very highly regulated industry. And ultimately, competition is what sort of drives down costs and benefits the consumers. So South Africa's banking sector is a very good example. If you just look at the advent of new banks there over the last couple of years, banks that are Time Bank, Discovery Bank, a whole bunch of these others that have come in, they've come in with next to no charges, sort of very good product offerings. That's what's driven it. It hasn't been the central bank coming and saying, you need to charge this much, or we're going to tell you what you're supposed to do and whatnot. So by fostering competition, people saying there's an opportunity here. The banks might be too expensive here. We can create a market there for ourselves. But by creating more and more layers to this regulation, you make it more difficult for someone new to come in.
I do have to ask you, though, given our small population and even fewer taxpayers and a very large proportion of the population that's not bankable, would more players in the market actually solve this?
I think there would be scope, for lower cost, for lower cost players. So the challenge is that there's so many regulatory hurdles and costs added to it that I think that already excludes everyone. So because you've got such a relatively small population and the costs are so high because of all of this, that immediately sort of says, no, thank you. We don't think it's worth it here. The juice isn't worth the squeeze.
What does this do for savings and investments?
So, I think it really just does limit the options that people have. We've got a handful of commercial banks here that dominate the sector. There's less competition, and you've now got a central bank that's sort of trying to direct what may be charged, what not. So we saw previously, I think, during COVID, where the central bank initially said, fees and charges are too high. We need to clamp down on those. The non-interest revenue portion of banks' income is too high, and banks should primarily be making their income through lending, through interest, as opposed to the non-interest revenue. And now we've seen the central bank come back and say, all right, well, we also think that your interest revenue is too high. We need to cut back on that as well. So I think it's sort of, it's a very tough message for the banks. The banks here are very profitable by regional and by global standards, by all means. But again, I don't think over-regulating the sector, quite frankly, is a solution. And there are always risks of unintended consequences. So by telling banks what they should be or how they should be pricing risk, you create the possibility that there are other opportunities. So for instance, in Namibia, it's not that banks are forced to lend to the private sector, to businesses or individuals. There are other opportunities. Banks, for instance, may be able to buy government securities, so treasury bills or government bonds. And where those offer better risk-adjusted returns, banks may then just start turning to do that. And you create the cycle where you've got crowding out, less investment into the private sector, or less lending to the private sector. It slows down investment from the domestic private sector. And you've got sort of a negative cycle that gets reinforced.
Yeah. Used to be called armchair banking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking deposits and buying government bonds and not really increasing appetite. Yeah, that's not gonna help the scenario. Thanks very much, Rob, for being my guest. This is a space to check, and maybe at some point we can talk a little bit about the industry then and the comparison between the big players. But that's for next time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, as always.